hate, no hype, no fear.
You're listening to Truth Frequency Radio.
We are TFR.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for tuning in once again. It is Tuesday. It is the third day of March. We are zooming right along through this year. Thank you guys for being here with me this morning. My name's JD. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. We are live right now. It is 10 o'clock a.m. Central Time in the United States. I didn't realize just how many people we had listening from overseas, so I'm going to have to start saying good afternoon and good evening and good morning to everybody all the time. And please, Kevin, if you're listening, I'm not stealing that from you. I just didn't realize quite how global Truth Frequency Radio is. And we've got some new friends in the chat room, people just showing up for the first time today. Paisley's in there. Moran is in there. Just happy to say hi to you guys for the first time. Lots of other familiar faces in the chat room. Really appreciate you guys being there in the morning. I love this aspect of the program and the network, just the idea that we're all creating a forum together so we can discuss things, go over the news together. I can, introduce you guys to some amazing guests, and you guys can ferry your questions across through the chat room to the guests. It's just, it's what a great thing that Chris and Cherie Geo have built here at Truth Frequency Radio. Really cannot encourage you guys enough to support them. Just throw a couple dollars at those guys. Everybody that can do that, if anybody can do that. All the other hosts, I'm sure, will really appreciate it. I would really appreciate it. And that's the way we stay at the top of the peak here for, alternative information and news, guys. It's the way we do it. You guys are out there busily sharing the show with your friends, which is evident by the emails that I keep getting of people who've just discovered the show and all the new listeners showing up all the time. It's just, it's humbling to be a part of it all, guys. It really, really is, and I can't thank you guys enough out there who are supporting both the program, sharing it with your friends, and also those of you guys who are supporting redpillreports.com. For you guys who are new in the chat room, just so you guys know kind of the format here. We do a two-hour show every day, Monday through Friday, and the first hour we go over all the news that's basically happened in the last 24 hours around the world. And so we'll go over all that for the first hour, and the second hour we'll bring a guest in. But if you'd like to go over the news with us or see some of the things, there's going to be a lot of stories I'm not going to be able to get to because I'm probably going to do what I'm doing right now, which is just rambling. So if you go to redpillreports.com, right at the top of the page is always going to be the show section for the day. It will outline the guest of the day. You'll be able to see who it is that we're bringing on to the program. Today is going to be a super interesting program, ladies and gentlemen, just as an aside right now. But then again, when you're at redpillreports.com and you're seeing that guest slash show section there, there's a whole bunch of news that we aggregate every single day trying to bring you guys up to date on what's going on in the world. And that's a great place for you guys to go for like a one-stop shopping experience for your daily dose of deprogramming. That's where I would go for that. Anyway, Karen Hudis joining us today, IMF whistleblower. She was a lawyer. Has her degree from Yale and then ended up working at the World Bank for a long time before she, essentially realized what was going on there and started blowing some whistles. And when you're that high up in the pyramid, ladies and gentlemen, when you start blowing whistles, that's a good way to end your career. So she was basically ostracized and has been working very hard to try and get to the bottom of the illegal banking system, the illegal law system, just essentially all of it. She's right in the middle of a ginormous mess. And for a long time, I believe that she felt like it was pretty hopeless, like there wasn't really anything that we could do. And she has kind of come around. Well, it's not that she's come around, ladies and gentlemen. It's that there's an idea out there that there is a global trust, that there is a large trust fund filled with wealth that was signed on by a whole bunch of countries a long time ago that was essentially wealth set aside for the benefit of humanity. And that has been an internet rumor for a very, very long time. But it turns out that that's not entirely fictitious. It turns out actually that it's 100% accurate, and Karen is now the lawyer responsible for disseminating those funds. So she is fending off, banking interests from around the world. She's fending off foreign governments and things like that as she's trying to basically follow the accord of this treaty, which was the Green-Hilton Accord. One of the things that a lot of people believe that Kennedy was involved with and then ended up costing him his life. But anyway, she has seen the documents. This global trust thing is actually 100% real, and she is essentially the administrator on the account right now, ladies and gentlemen. So a lot of very interesting stuff that's going to come out of this discussion today. We're going to get to the bottom of this whole Basel III compliance, which is what the United States is supposed to be involved with as of, I believe, yesterday or the 1st, and they're supposed to be making some kind of announcement to Congress as of today, if I'm not mistaken. So I want to know what that's about, if it just has to do with fiat currency or if it's part of some sort of transition that's going on right now. There's a massive story coming out of India right now, and it's totally I found it in the bottom of another article the other day and had to go verify it for myself that India is doing something pretty impressive right now. And so we're going to talk about that from an economic standpoint also with Karen Hudis. So again, lots of stuff to talk about, massive stuff. I agree, people in the chat room getting excited already. So again, Karen Hudis, one of my very favorite people. She has been behind the curtains of Oz, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, she has seen it. So I'm going to ask her some questions today that might seem a little silly to you guys, but I think that there are a lot of people out there that kind of know where I'm coming from with everything that's going on. I told Jack Blood yesterday I've only got about 2 weeks of tolerance left involved with this whole system. So unless we get to the bottom of this or hear some really good news out of Karen, I don't know what's going to happen. And let's see, tomorrow James Perloff will be on the show. We're going to be talking quite a bit about Darwinism. I think that this is a discussion that we need to have. I think a lot of people don't understand the effect that Darwinism has on our construct of reality and how the framework of Darwinism has actually changed the way we think about ourselves and the way that we allow the legal system to work. And yes, I believe those things are definitely connected. If you go look up Alan Adask's work with the man or other animal stuff, there's a lot that ties the Darwin theory into the legal system that we are under these days. So we need to talk about it. And I'm really looking forward to James Perloff. He's written a couple of great books just on the topic of Darwinism. I've had him on the program to talk about some of his historical books, which are detailed to the nth degree. But I'm definitely looking forward to some scientific and philosophical perspective from him as well. I think you guys will enjoy that. And then, let's see, Greg Morris will be on the show Friday. We're going to be talking about the latest developments in the mortgage crisis scandal. Again, if you guys have a home out there, if you own a mortgage, there's about 90% chance right now that you don't own your home, that you could not prove it in a court of law if you had to, because essentially, there's been a system that has been designed behind the scenes to steal the wealth from your mortgage, put it into derivatives, and then use that to pay for terrorism activities and things like that. It's the same exact thing that these guys have been doing for, you know, since the 30s, but they've just done it now more efficiently and electronically and more obfuscated than it's been done in the past. So again, if you guys want to find out more about this, and I really recommend that you do, this affects absolutely everybody listening to this broadcast right now. At the very top of redpillreports.com, you can find a link to Greg Morse's petition that is going to get us in front of a joint session of Congress so we can actually address these criminals. There's also, and I really recommend people get on board with that. There's not a lot of petitions I'm going to tell you guys to sign. That's one of them. Get on board with that. And also you'll be able to find about, I think there's 7 or 8 articles there about the global, or about the mortgage crisis, about what actually happened, how to identify and your own mortgage, whether or not you need to get a lawyer involved at this point, because again, there's a really good chance that your mortgage has been compromised out there. And again, comes down to this whole chain of title thing. If you can't prove that chain of title goes all the way back to when that land grant happened, when we became sovereign, then you don't own that property. That's just the bottom line. So if you guys want to know more about that, right at the top of Red Pill Reports, please go check that stuff out. And then Friday is going to be complete mayhem and craziness on the program. Just giving you guys a heads up right now, Aaron Dykes, Melissa Melton going to be joining us for the entire 2 hours. We're going to go over all the news of the day, and it's going to be crazy because they have way more insight into reality than I do. Those guys are super duper sharp and good, just great people. Really looking forward to having them on the program on Friday, and also want to talk a little bit about Melissa's new side project. I think it was nutritionalanarchy.com was her new website to go along with the TruthStream Media site. Again, one side providing all the intel in terms of why we're so screwed, and the other one providing some insight on how we can get out of the mess. That Nutritional Anarchy site, I think, is going to be a big deal in the future. So definitely looking forward to the rest of the week. I got to tell you right now, it's pretty dismal in Missouri. It's gray, nasty. We're at that two-day of snow melting phase where everything is just blah. And I hope wherever you guys are at, it's better than it is here because it's yucky. Anyway, at least it's warming up, though, and the snow's melting. So at least maybe we'll see some sort of springtime activity sometime in the future. Okay, moving on here. Let's talk about some international news. Again, if you go to redpillreports.com, you can find all of these articles under the show section at the top of the page. But I do want to jump into some international news right now. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. Iraq apparently has launched a major assault to retake Tikrit from the Islamic State. This coming out of Yahoo News. I have not been able to corroborate this in the Iraqi news yet. So, again, take this with a grain of salt. But I don't know why they would put such a large story out, especially given the last couple of days. We've been hearing that there was going to be this ginormous initiative against Tikrit, and it does look like as of today, earlier today, it did take place. So some 30,000 Iraqi troops and militia, backed by aircraft, pounded jihadists in and around Tikrit in the biggest offensive yet to retake one of the Islamic State group's main strongholds. Government forces have battled their way north for months, notching up key victories against ISIS. But Tikrit has been their toughest targets yet, with jihadists having resisted them several times. Commanders voiced hope the operation launched Monday would be a step towards the recapture of Mosul, which is the jihadists' main hub in Iraq. And although a U.S. envoy leading the international coalition against ISIS has not put any time frame on the recapture of Mosul, the Army, Federal Police, Popular Mobilization, which means volunteer units, and the Sons of Saladin's tribes are performing the duties of liberation in the largest operation against Daesh since June. Daesh is what the Iraqis call the Islamic State there. So again, this is a senior army officer on the ground using that Arabic acronym for ISIS. So they are certain of victory is what they're saying. The operation is not going to be easy, according to this officer telling the Associated Press. The operation to take Tikrit began early Monday morning after being announced by Prime Minister Al-Abadi, wow, I can't believe I mispronounced his name, after being announced by Prime Minister Al-Abadi after the previous evening. So he came out Sunday night and said, we're gonna do this thing against Tikrit, and it's going to be big. And I think this is a much bigger story than people are giving it credit for right now, because this is not a coalition. This is not, I mean, obviously we are helping them out, and there could potentially be some additional supporters in the area. Iran might be in there. There might be some targeting going on the ground with the U.S., using advisors, but for the most part, for all intents and purposes, this is a pure Iraqi initiative, and this is huge, huge news to the people of Iraq, because they are struggling right now. They're trying to get their sovereignty back. They're trying to show unity with the Kurdistan region, and all of that stuff has been successful. I mean, we're talking about a country clawing its way back from the brink of oblivion at this point, and this battle against Tikrit, I don't think is going to take very long. I think this is going to be a big deal, and I think Iraq has got some aces up their sleeves here that I think they're going to spring on the population here pretty soon. Don't read too much into that, because I'm not going to go into any more detail on that. But again, Abadi has now urged the security forces to spare civilians. This is an echo, a message echoed by the UN and responding to the fears against reprisals right now. But he did appeal to residents to turn against the jihadists. Got to remember, the jihadists right now are getting paid about $190 a month, and maybe they're given a goat. That's pretty much what they're getting. So if we can figure out a way to encourage people to just lay down arms and walk away, I think that's a potential that's going to be happening here in Iraq soon. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on what's going on in Tikrit right now. Obviously a major, major jumping point to get up to Mosul, which is kind of the last enclave of the jihadists right now in Iraq. And I know a lot of people out there probably surprised with me being gung-ho about war, but I'm sick of war, and I'm sick of the people of Iraq being completely oppressed by the rest of the world. And I'm really encouraged by them, you know, basically finding the cojones to stand up against ISIS and to get the job done once and for all and get their country back, because it needs to happen. Okay, moving on here. We got some more. Man, so much news today. Sorry, guys, here. Okay. Iran on Tuesday rejected as unacceptable U.S. President Barack Obama's demand that it freezes sensitive nuclear activities for at least 10 years, but it said it would continue the talks aimed at securing a deal. So, again, the story breaking right now on Reuters is that Iran has rejected Barack Obama's demand that it freezes its sensitive nuclear activities for the next 10 years. I do not believe this at all, ladies and gentlemen. I do not believe for 1 second. I think that Fox News was on the news, or Fox News was breaking stuff about a week ago that these deals had already been pinned. So why are they saying this now? Well, it probably has a lot to do with the fact that Netanyahu should be addressing Congress right now as we speak on C-SPAN, or at least he started about a half an hour ago. Well, I don't know how punctual he is compared to if you think about Barack, I don't think that guy's ever been to a meeting on time. But again, Netanyahu should be talking to Congress right now. So obviously they're going to put in the news something about this deal still needing more negotiation. John Kerry saying that things are going well in Geneva there, but that they still need more negotiation. I think this is just a stalling tactic. I think they're going to get Netanyahu in and out of the country, let him make his little speech. He spoke at at AIPAC yesterday. I just, you know, I'm not listening to what this guy has to say, to be perfectly honest. But interesting now that that this story is breaking in the news today about Iran, because I don't necessarily believe that. I remember also that, you know, one of Obama's senior officials there, senior advisors, is an Iranian national. So the idea that we're going to just not, especially given all the wire breaches that we've had, you know, this news about Barack threatening to shoot down Israeli jets from inside of Iraq should they decide to attack Iran. You know, there's a lot going on here behind the scenes. And I think that Iran and our president are a lot closer in cahoots than Reuters would have us believe right now. I'm just putting that out there as conjecture. I believe that that story is not entirely accurate. Here's a story also that I think important story breaking today. Got to keep the rhetoric up. This is a story from the Times of Israel. Okay, so an Israeli news source saying now that a top Hamas general says the group is preparing for war with Israel. Okay, so the head of the Gaza's organization's military wing says it is replenishing its rocket stocks and looking to forge new regional allies. So in a rare public appearance, the head of Hamas's military wing on Sunday said although the terror group was not actively seeking another round of violence with Israel, it has continued to stockpile rockets in anticipation of a future war. This is Marwan Issa. He's the top commander for Hamas's Adin al-Qassam brigades made the comments during a conference organized by Hamas-linked think tank in his first public appearance in over 3 years, according to Ynet. So again, is this an important story? Is this a real story? Difficult to say, but it's interesting to me that it's breaking in the Times of Israel the day that Netanyahu is scheduled to be speaking in front of Parliament. Now he can just say, oh, we got this guy here, head of Hamas, saying he's still stockpiling rockets. Of course he's stockpiling rockets. Of course they are. They're being oppressed. They don't have medical care. I mean, why would you not stockpile rockets? You're being occupied. You have another country coming in and bulldozing your civilians' homes. What would you do? What would you do? And if you're, say, you're in, you know, Austin, and a bunch of Mexican people in tanks came over and decided they want to live in your neighborhood and just started bulldozing the house and threatening you with missiles? Because that's exactly what's going on in Gaza right now. Period. And if you don't believe me, go look at Anna Balzer's presentation. Israel Prime Minister, just as another caveat here again. Premier, he spoke at AIPAC yesterday before his congressional speech that he was supposed to be giving today, right now. He says he basically went on record saying that the relations between Israel and the United States are not nearly as soured as everybody would have us believe. So that's essentially what he was saying. He's saying he respects Obama, he respects the office, blah, blah, blah. But then he does cut to the point of his visit. And again, this is him speaking at the AIPAC yesterday. The main reason that he is here is to talk about Iran and its nuclear program. So there's the difference between the United States and Israel. It's that the United States, you got to keep coming back to facts. It's got to keep coming back to facts. The fact of the matter is the United States and Israel both have nuclear weapons. Iran does not. The United States and Israel did not sign on to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and Iran has. So, you know, who's the bad guy here, really, fundamentally? And if you look at Iran, they're freaking surrounded by people with the nuclear weapons. I mean, let's say we let them develop one or two. Israel has 100, Okay, anything that Iran does, Israel is the most powerful military in the region. They are the fifth largest weapons producer on the planet. We send them $8.5 million a day. If Israel wants to destroy a country, there is nothing on God's green earth, especially not the United States, that's going to stop that. So all of this garbage that's going on between Israel and Iran and the United States and this nuclear thing, it's all a show. It's all garbage. I don't believe any of it. I believe that the sanctions are going to be lifted against Iran very, very soon. I believe that they're going to be allowed to develop their nuclear program because essentially all they're trying to do is power their infrastructure. Why don't we let them team up with Russia and build one of those new fusion plants that they're building all over Africa now? Why does it have to be enriched uranium? Why can't we come to some kind of accord, use technology, solve the problem, and at the same time figure out a way to shut Netanyahu up? Boy, that's something I'd like to see. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about something else. Oh, well, we can't because Palestine's still in the news. Let's see here. They are moving forward with their case at the ICC against Israel. They announced, I think, yesterday Palestine's first complaint against Israel's alleged war crimes will be filed at the International Criminal Court in April, according to a senior Palestinian official. And the issue will reportedly be related to, of course, the 2014 war in Gaza. The Palestinians will be able to take legal action at the court based in The Hague, Netherlands, after the notion moved to join the international authority formally in January. According to the court's procedures, the statute will enter into force for the state of Palestine on April 1st. Israel's foreign ministry spokesman, Emmanuel Nashon, expressed his country's refusal to act to the declaration, describing it as speculative and hypothetical, as quoted by the Associated Press. The Israeli administration for decades consistently opposed Palestine's legal power to sue Israel for war crimes. And of course, after Palestine moved to join the ICC, was confirmed by the UN in January. This is when Israeli's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said that his country will not let Israeli Defense Forces soldiers and officers be dragged to The Hague because they have the moral authority, because they have words written in a book, and they say that that is more important. And you know what? For anybody out there that says I'm anti-Semitic, let's remember the fact, first of all, that we're not talking about Judaism here. I have no problem with the Jewish religion. These people are Zionists, and there's a big difference. And if you really want to cry to me about 6 million Jews that died in the Holocaust, let's have a little discussion about the 200 million Native Americans that were slaughtered by quote-unquote Christians, okay? And I'm not trying to get on a tirade here, but if we're going to use some kind of pity card to establish the development of a nation that is allowed to then go out and run rampaging across other people, we got to do something about that. There needs to be – somebody actually needs to have an adult discussion about this. So that's what we're trying to do right now. And again, you can see the temper tantrum already coming out of Israel saying we're not going to let any of our any of our soldiers be dragged off to The Hague. Well, you know what? You are. That's kind of why The Hague is there. The Hague, the International Criminal Court's got jurisdiction to prosecute individuals for the international crimes of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. That's what it is for. So again, good chance that you're going to go ahead and send your troops there, because if that is what they did, then that's what's going on. There you go. Moving on, King of Jordan. What are we talking about with King of Jordan here? man, come on, computer, work with me here. King of Jordan. Oh, yeah. He's basically saying that this battle against ISIS is now calling it World War III. He's saying it's a generational fight. Basically, Jordan is real, real mad about the killing of that pilot still. So they're still, essentially lined up to go to war with ISIS wherever, that war ends up being. I don't know necessarily if they are part of the coalition that is going, into Tikrit right now. There's not a lot of information going on about that, but, again, Jordan is still ramping up and using rhetoric like World War III against ISIS. So again, not looking like it's in front of Parliament. Did I say Parliament? Man, tell you what, I'm losing my mind up here, people. Okay, let's see here. What's going on here? Twitter shut down some ISIS feeds, as did YouTube, shutting down the ISIS channels and the Twitter feeds. You know, what do we think about that? Is that important? Well, it kind of is ADD. Yes, exactly. Hey, look, a squirrel. It is important because here what we're setting is a precedent where these companies that believe that they have moral authority can say one view or another view you know, an extremist view and then shut down channels. Do I necessarily believe that ISIS should have Twitter feeds or YouTube channels? No, but that's still freedom of speech. I mean, if you aren't going to protect theirs, then you're not going to protect ours. And so we're on that slippery slope at this point. Russia announced the expansion of its navy by 50 vessels this year, including two new nuclear-powered submarines and an aircraft carrier. It appears that NATO's saber-rattling has drawn a response slash threat slash warning following British plans to send military advisors to the Ukraine, which NATO has stated are not confirmed. This is according to the TASS news agency there in Russia. Russia's NATO envoy, Alexander Grushko, warned that Russia will take all measures against possible NATO threat in Ukraine, adding that Russia's response may include military measures. So this is the first time that we've actually heard Russia come out and say that they will respond using military force against any type of NATO threat. So that's pretty important here. Because again, we know that the United States is hedging their bets towards war. We had that silly story the other day about Poland getting ready to send military advisors, while at the same time, the United States just happening to gift them, you know, 45 MRAPs and a whole bunch of ancillary equipment and things like that to send to Ukraine. So, you know, you don't have to read too far between the lines here to see that the United States with NATO and now this new, you know, junta government that we've got established in the Ukraine are hedging their bets towards war. They are looking towards war. And I don't think that Moscow is really that thrilled about it. It seems like Moscow has probably had enough at this point. We're still waiting to hear anything at all about MH17, what happened to the black boxes, who shot that plane down. I think Moscow has probably had it up to their eyeballs. They're probably at a point now where they're just going to say, you know what, you guys mess with us anymore. We are going to take all measures, including military technical, to neutralize possible threat from NATO presence in the Ukraine. Also have to remember, Shanghai Corporation Organization, nobody wants to talk about them. They're just as big as NATO. The predominant languages that they speak are Russian and Chinese. Hint, hint. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. There's a really big military force out there to counter NATO. It's called the Shanghai Corporation Organization, and you could look them up. I'm kind of new to that information, but I do believe that Moscow is part of that because they speak Russian there. Anyway, more news when we come back from this 3-minute break, guys. I appreciate you all being in here this morning in the chat room. Kev Baker's in the chat room, one and only, ladies and gentlemen. Man, I love the host here. So, we'll be right back, guys. 3-minute break. Keep it right here.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Doctrine Ministries with Kenneth Emmanuel.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Thank all of you guys who are in the chat room right now. I hope you guys are meeting some new friends and enjoying the program so far. I'm going to try and jump through a little bit of extra news here real quick while we're running out of time. Right now, Italy planning on basically sending troops down to they're having drills right now. Italy right now is having drills, essentially getting ready to go and launch an initiative against Libya. I didn't really realize this because I don't own a globe, but Italy, their southern islands are only about 300 kilometers from the Libyan coast, so right now they are, again, doing some naval drills out there to basically show that they're supporting whichever side, the NATO side is going to fall down on inside of Libya right now. Libya, obviously, still a major, major mess. Thank you, Hillary Clinton, for that. But Italy, again, beginning naval drills there. North Korea shot a couple more missiles out into the ocean after the United States and South Korea began their annual military drills in the area. This is, of course, in protest to these drills, so North Korea always likes to fire out some missiles out into the sea. I would think that if you were a country that had limited resources, you wouldn't be shooting off, $20 million missiles just to make a point, but apparently things are good in North Korea enough that they can waste a whole bunch of money shooting a bunch of very expensive equipment off into the ocean for no reason whatsoever. Got to keep up the rhetoric of war going on over there. This is a disgusting story coming out of Japan right now, and normally I would put this down in the health news, but since we do have a lot of international listeners and people who travel, I thought I'd throw this up because this kind of shocked me a little bit. But Nippon Airways was one of the larger airlines there in Japan. They apparently are going to start serving food from the Fukushima prefecture beginning in March of this year. So I guess they've already begun just as of 3 days ago. But between March and May, they're going to feature food from the Fukushima prefecture as part of a marketing campaign that was meant to highlight food from all over Japan. And also the international connecting lounges of the Nippon Air Services will also serve Fukushima peaches, tomatoes, and beef, as well as 12 types of rice wine. So if you're traveling through Japan right now on Nippon Airlines, the normal warning that I would give, of course, would be not to eat any airline food, but we're just going to double that warning for Nippon Airlines going forward into the future, at least through May. If they offer you something at one of their intercontinental lounges, you say no thank you. Just say it just like that. Arigato. No thank you. That's thank you. Domo arigato. Thank you very much, but no. Okay, let's move on here. We got some major national news we got to cover. Man, there's just so much going on right now, guys. I don't even know how to cover it all. Breaking story this morning, Obama very interested apparently in raising taxes via unilateral executive action. So he has apparently sent letters to the Treasury Secretary Jack Lew over the weekend to try and identify a number of executive actions that he believes the IRS could take without any input from Congress that would close loopholes currently used by corporations. And in the past, IRS lawyers have been pretty hesitant to use executive actions to raise significant amount of revenue, but That same calculation has changed in other federal agencies since Obama has become president. So again, trying to do something for the middle class, or at least ostensibly that's what they're saying, trying to close some corporate tax loopholes, which kind of makes sense to me at this point, because these people, these corporations have stolen billions and billions of dollars from us. But interesting also, some breaking stories coming out this morning about Hillary Clinton apparently using a domain that was registered the day of her Senate hearing. So we're talking about a New York Times report. They reported this late last night that during her tenure at the State Department, Hillary Clinton never actually used her official email account to conduct communications, relying instead on a private email account. And as the Times notes, only official accounts are automatically retained under the Federal Records Act, meaning that none of Clinton's email communication has been preserved. In March of 2013, an advisor to Clinton, Sidney Blumenthal, had his email hacked by Guccifer, the Romanian hacker perhaps best known for revealing George W. Bush's paintings to the world. At the time, Gawker reported that Blumenthal was communicating with an account that appeared to belong to the Clinton at the ClintonEmail.com domain, and the content of some of those emails was published by RT. You can find the RT story. I'm going to go over it here in just a second, but it is also at RedPillReports.com under the show section in the news area there. But they have, as of this morning, printed all of Guccifer's releases from the this allegedly from Hillary's account there, and you can go to well, you can go to I guess it's Russia Today right now and just look for Hillary Clinton's backed email hacked Benghazi emails. They fully released all of them this morning as part of the widespread public interest in the initial release that RT did just a few weeks ago. So again, you can now go through and read all of these emails for yourself. They're hosted right now at Russia Today. Again, you can find them in the news section also. But again, Hillary Clinton on the hot seat right now, and all of her communications apparently unable to be found because she was using private communications, which is not how she's supposed to be doing her job as Secretary of State, because again, the Federal Registry is supposed to be able to have a copy of all of those communications just in case something, you know, happens, I guess we could say, such as Benghazi. Okay, moving on. Also, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, but on Friday, Congress faced a deadline to fund Homeland Security Department before midnight. The Democrats wanted a clean, long-term funding bill, while the Republicans wanted to block President Obama's executive action on immigration, or at least to force the Senate to go to conference on a measure that might do so. Neither side could get what they wanted, so they basically just punted the ball again for another week down the road, which means this coming Friday, March 6th, will present the Hill with the same set of bad choices and another shutdown deadline. The Senate is expected to take a procedural vote on Monday and on whether or not to go to conference on the long-term DHS bill, but the Democrats unwilling to provide the necessary votes to get to 60, so the House GOP leaders will be stuck exactly where they were last week. At the urging of the House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democrats went along with the one-week extension because they believe Speaker John Boehner will put the long-term bill they want on the floor this week. Boehner said he has made no such promise, but that doesn't mean he won't end up doing exactly that by Friday. The question is whether or not he can do so, and therefore averting the shutdown both he and the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wanted to avoid last week, but without imperiling his speakership. So again, everything's still up in the air in terms of the Department of Homeland Security. I have no idea what's going on there right now. I have to stop. Pardon me. Hold on a second here, guys. Pardon me. I did take Jack Blood's advice yesterday and tune into the first three episodes of The House of Cards last night. First of all, nobody told me that Kevin Spacey was a starring role in that, and that's all anybody would have had to told me because he's an amazing actor. But I'll tell you what, I was blown away by the way that things allegedly, according to that program, operate in D.C., and it makes me wonder a lot of things about people like Mitch McConnell and Mr. Boehner and Nancy Pelosi and things like that, because it's just got to be so absolutely criminal that's what's going on there right now. Funny comments in the chat room right now. If you guys aren't in the chat room at Truth Frequency Radio, you're missing out on good stuff. Good stuff. Oh yeah, also just as a side note, the White House grounds were breached again on Monday night. Twice, in fact. This time, however, Secret Service police arrested two men who attempted to gain access to the executive mansion before they were able to get very far. One person was arrested about 11:30 at night on Sunday evening after climbing over a bicycle rack set up outside the White House's main fence and charged with unlawful entry. At about 6:45 in the morning on Monday, a second person was stopped after trying to enter the grounds through a White House gate as construction worker was exiting through a security checkpoint. The man became violent and was then arrested. So the White House was briefly locked down after both incidents as part of Secret Service protocol, according to Reuters. So again, more breaches occurring at the White House. Two of them, in fact, just in the last 48 hours. Interesting stuff there. Okay. And if you had any inclination or ideas about whether or not the murder of Boris Nemtsov was a false flag, let's just go ahead and put that to rest right now. So again, if you had any doubts that the Kremlin at midnight, point blank, Ukrainian model by his side, Hollywood scripted murder of the Russian fifth columnist Boris Nemtsov, then the fact that his very good friend John, for the love of God, McCain, is throwing his hat in the ring should be a pretty clear signal that the USA, or at very least the neocon sociopaths in Washington, had a pretty active hand in the newest Putin is evil false flag. So while McCain's post is not the same as, say, I don't know, showing up in Kiev during the Maidan and making a speech in front of gathering protesters, because obviously John, for the love of God, McCain would never do anything like, oh, wait a minute. The fact that the Arizona senator has once again crawled out from his evil lair to make such a post definitely means something. Washington, D.C., U.S. Senator John McCain today released the following statement on the murder of Russian opposition leader and human rights activist Boris Nemtsov. He said, "I was devastated to learn of the murder in Moscow today of my good friend Boris Nemtsov. My thoughts and prayers are with his family and many friends in Russia and around the world. With his death, the struggle for free speech and human rights in Russia has suffered another devastating blow. That Boris's murder occurred in a secure part of the Russian capital raises legitimate concerns about the circumstances of his killing and who was responsible." There's a point I would agree with him on. But regardless of who actually pulled the trigger, Boris is dead because of the environment of impunity that Vladimir Putin has created in Russia, where individuals are routinely persecuted and attacked for their beliefs, including by the Russian government, and no one is ever held responsible. Sounds a lot like the United States of America. Just saying. He says, "I have long been concerned about Boris's safety and said so publicly. I will never forget the last meeting we had. I begged him to be careful. And Boris told me that he would never give up the fight for freedom, human rights, and rule of law for his fellow Russians, even if it cost him his life. I am heartbroken that it has come to that. There must be a full investigation of Boris's murder, and the responsible party must be held accountable. The world will be watching." So again, if you had any doubts that was a false flag, I think the fact that John, for the love of God, McCain has now come out offering his condolences to his very good friend Boris Nemtsov is a pretty good indicator that there's probably a lot more going on behind the scenes. Okay, moving aside from that to another absolutely ridiculous story. You want to talk about inside jobs? Here's another one. Rolla, North Carolina. Shortly after dusk, along a lonely stretch of highway, Interstate 95, this happened. Let me make sure I know exactly when this happened. I think this happened yesterday evening. Yes, yesterday evening. Armed robbers attacked an armored truck, tied up the two guards, and disappeared into the night with 275 pounds of gold bars. That is literally like stealing the entire band of the Backstreet Boys all at one time. So the guards working for TransValue Incorporated of Miami reported pulling off the side of the road at about 6:30 p.m., this is Sunday evening, after their vehicle began having mechanical problems in eastern North Carolina. The guards told police they were surprised by three armed men driving a white van who ordered the guards to lie on the ground. First question, why were the guards outside of the van? Tied their hands behind their backs and then marched them into the nearby woods. The robbers then helped themselves to barrels filled with the $4.8 million in gold before making their getaway. TransValue says its employees were not injured during the heist. And TransValue Chief Executive Officer Jay Rodriguez said the truck carrying the gold bars left Miami at about 4 a.m. on Sunday morning. The load was headed to Attleboro, Massachusetts, a town south of Boston, nicknamed Jewelry City for a large number of manufacturers based there. At this time, they're working with authorities trying to resolve the matter. They are offering a $50,000 reward for any information leading to the arrest of the criminals. Can you say inside job? This is the 11th largest gold heist in the history of gold heists, ladies and gentlemen. According to the website, TransValue specializes in the transporting of gold, precious metals, gems, and jewelry, and the company says its shipments are insured for up to $100 million. But again, 4.8 million 275 pounds of gold stolen from an armored vehicle there in North Carolina. I don't understand how that could possibly happen. I'm under the impression that when you're driving an armored vehicle, it's armored for a reason. It's basically like driving around in a vault. So why exactly did these guys leave the van? Unless this was an inside job. Who arranged? Who's in charge of the motor pool at TransValue? Because I'd be looking at that guy. Somebody's supposed to be keeping maintenance records on these vehicles. Obviously, the most important part of transporting things is the actual transporting of the things. So you have to make sure the thing that's transporting, being the car, works. So again, why were these guys out? No indication as to what the robbers were armed with. Because ISIS. Exactly, Woodwolf. Because racism. That's why. No indication of how these guys got into the van. No indication of what they were armed with. I'm surprised that these vehicles don't have cameras on them. Maybe that's just me. Here's a tip for TransValue. You could probably up the value of your company by putting cameras on your trucks, guys. And then we could look at that. We'd know some of the answers to these questions that we don't know right now. But again, probably an inside job going on. 11th large. I mean, really, come on. Had to be an inside job. That's seriously 275 pounds. That's the entire Backstreet Boys band all in one place. How are these guys shipping that? I mean, how are you going to get that all into a van? I mean, that would have taken some time. I don't know. That had to be an inside job. Okay, let's see. The White House commissioned a task force. We talked a little bit about this last week, that Obama was getting ready to essentially create an oversight committee for local law enforcement officers here in the United States. And I do think this is a good thing. I don't know necessarily how this is going to work out, but he is now charging the group of law enforcement officials, academics, and advocates with reviewing policies and policing practices after nationwide demonstrations because of obviously the Ferguson situation and the Garner situation there in New York. Who knows how long this is going to take to get it done. We don't really know right now. I'll move on to this other article that has some more information about it. They really spread this stuff out. Local law enforcement agencies now to be required to report to the federal government when their officers kill someone. We talked to who was it? It was Dale Brown at the Detroit Threat Management Center. We talked to him a couple of times. Absolutely one of the most amazing people ever. I think he's actually coming back on the program next week. I'm not sure right now. But he talked about the fact that on a national level, none of the municipal law enforcement agencies really report. I think he said out of 18,000, less than 1,000 actually report to the FBI every time anybody's killed by one of their officers. So this is part of this new regulation or some of the recommendations that Obama is funneling through his task force, and hopefully that will start coming down to us. Here's the deal, though. A lot of people are worried about this whole, federalization, or are we going to be in a police state kind of thing. We've got four layers of law enforcement here in my town. We've got, one, and that's not even if you include the federals. You got the federal, you got marshals, FBI, all of that exists in every state. But then you've got your state patrol, you've got your county police, you've got your city police. I mean, that's four layers of policing. Any place around the world, they don't have stuff like that. That's really unusual. So everybody who's out there is worried, there's going to be this grand police takeover. We're here, guys. We're in it right now. I mean, you don't think these agencies are connected? You don't think that all of these municipal, organizations are all federalized and working under the same set of rules? I mean, we've got four layers of law enforcement in my little teeny town right here. We're here. We're in the police state. I mean, I don't know how else to get around that. But Obama doing what he can, it looks like, to try and adjust that stuff. Obviously, none of us here listening to this program believe that that's going to make any kind of headway. It's just more garbage and rhetoric coming out of the trying to placate people, trying to keep us divided. Because, if the administration comes out and admits, yes, there's this division between law enforcement and people, well, it makes it all the more real for anybody out there who doesn't believe in it right now. So just saying. I want to talk about this story from North Carolina. North Carolina District Attorney Office is now going to be seeking the death penalty against the man indicted in the shooting death of three young Muslims in Chapel Hill last month, in North Carolina. Craig Hicks, 46, he's being charged with three counts of first-degree murder in the deaths of a newlywed couple who were his neighbors and the wife's sister at a condominium complex in killings that drew international attention. Federal investigators are working right now to determine whether or not Hicks, who is a paralegal student, was motivated by hatred towards the victims because of their religion. Local police said that their initial investigation indicated a dispute over parking may have prompted the February 10th shooting. But again, they are going to be seeking the death penalty for him now. That's probably a good thing. I don't know. I'm of the opinion that that was a hate crime. Just saying. Oh, and I got to talk about this other story too. The videos in the news section at redpillreports.com. I don't want to go watch it again. But again, we had this. We touched on this story yesterday of the homeless man who was shot by the LAPD officers. Was all caught on video. It's in the news links again at redpillreports.com under the show section there. I don't know how to describe it other than to say that it's extremely graphic. I wouldn't watch it if you're not into, or if you're not, you know, if you're somebody that's affected a lot by violence, is not something that I would see. But it does appear to show a homeless guy being dragged out of a tent because he's not allowed to have a tent in that location after 6 in the morning. 6 different officers, they began to tase him. He became violent because he was on the ground being tased by 6 people in costumes. And then somebody, one of the police officers yells, drop the gun, and they shoot him and, you know, basically kill him right there in the sidewalk. Whether or not he had a gun, I don't know. If I got 6 guys on top of me with costumes and lethal weapons, I'm probably going to put my hand on one of their weapons and try and keep them from pulling it out on me, which is, I would assume, exactly what was going on here. But they shot the guy, another tragic death, and, you know, you got to look at what Portland's done recently. You know, Portland changed their laws or their rules in terms of how police officers deal with people who are obviously mentally, you know, affected individuals. And perhaps LAPD maybe could take a lesson from the Portland Police Department and learn how to deal with people who are, you know, not mentally with it at the time. Because obviously that guy didn't – you have 6 guys. You don't need to kill this dude. It's just cowards is really what it comes down to. Okay, let's see here. I'm going to move on. Someone gave me the BDI number a second ago. I'm going to jump back to that. We're going to have to talk a little bit about this whole Basel III thing, which is supposed to go into effect. And I see Karen has come online here now, so we'll be able to talk to her in about 7 or 8 minutes. But let's look at what is going on in the markets right now at the indices. Dow is way down right now, 139 points down, still way above the 18,000 mark, but it is down. S&P down also about 15 points, and the futures on the NASDAQ below also way down at 4.44 and 1 right now. Moving on to the commodity section here, gold taking a little bit of a drawback, still right basically at that $1,200 mark. We're at 1203. Silver sitting at 16.25. Let's check out what the Forex is doing. The euro has just barely clawed back to 1.12 right now against the dollar, just barely, and I'm talking barely. But within a fraction of a point of still being in that 111. So again, the euro has still continued to fall. Bitcoin having a really big week this week for some reason, up another almost $2 today at 264 right now for the Bitcoin. We'll go look at the BDI up again. I have 548. Truth, is that what you've got for the BDI out there? 548 up about 8 points today, almost a percentage and a half. So again, seeing some movement across the board in terms of some shipping. Okay, moving away from that. Here's this big story I wanted to break from India right now, because I found an indication about this in the bottom of a Zero Hedge article, and I thought, what in the heck? Truth be told, it's telling me right now, BDI 553 up 5 points. Thank you, brother. I was thinking, what in the heck is going on in India? We've got all this speculation right now. I'm moving to gold-backed securities across the board. Obviously, that's what we need to do. We need to get our value back into our currency right now. There's a reason that a loaf of bread costs you guys $4 out there. That's because your dollar is worth about 4 pennies. And so India, this is huge, huge, huge. Remember, India is part of the BRICS organization, guys. India will introduce gold deposit accounts to utilize 20,000 tons of gold available within the country and launch a sovereign bond as an alternative to buying the metal. Moves like that are likely to cut imports into the biggest gold consumer on the planet. Finance Minister Jaitley, however, did not make any mention of cutting the 10% import duty on his speech on Saturday, unveiling the budget for the next fiscal year starting April 1st. So India ships about 800 to 1,000 tons of gold a year, despite massive stocks in the country that is neither traded nor monetized. Without setting a timeline, Jaitley, again, the finance minister of India, said the government will introduce a gold monetization scheme, which will replace the present gold deposit and gold metal loan schemes. Does anybody else have major red flags and not red flags, but fireworks going off in your mind right now regarding this story? This is huge, ladies and gentlemen. If you guys are not picking this up, this is a country moving quickly to monetize gold, not just for the citizens, but for the banking structure. This is huge. This is the beginning of the switch, ladies and gentlemen. Again, huge. Gold depositors will earn an interest on their metal accounts, while jewelers can obtain loans against it, and banks and other dealers will be able to monetize this gold. The government will also develop a sovereign gold bond as an alternative to purchasing gold. The bonds will carry a fixed rate of interest, and holders will be able to redeem them in cash on the face value of the gold. Jaitley said the work will also start on an Indian gold coin to cut demand for foreign minted coins. This is the story of the week, ladies and gentlemen, buried all the way on the bottom of Reuters. Nobody wants you to understand that countries around the world are moving fast and furiously to start monetizing gold, put value back in their assets. You gotta wonder, is the United States going to be the last one on that list? How are we going to regain our value that has been stolen from our currency? I think it has a lot to do with what Karen Hudis is going to come on the program in about 5 minutes and talk about. But again, that story from India is ginormous, ginormous, ladies and gentlemen. And I hope that you guys are not understanding how big that really is. Let's see here. What else is going on? We're just about out of time, and I'm missing on the science and tech. Let's jump out in there and make sure I'm not missing any. Super sweet. I'll give you all the quick hacker headlines for anybody out there who wants to become a hacker or is interested in the hacking world. Hackers did infect the Illinois police station and made them pay a $500 Bitcoin ransom to unfreeze their files and unfreeze all the data, according to the suburban Chicago Police Department. So that was an interesting little hack that took place. Also, about 200 programmers found a glitch in the online ticketing system that is used for the annual Burning Man Desert Camping Festival, and they went ahead and cut in line to buy tickets early for that. Thought that was kind of interesting. You know, it's nice to use technology to your advantage. And also, Lenovo has been in the news quite a bit. Because obviously there's been this big revelations about them pre-installing insecure software on computer laptops. So attackers decided to commandeer the company Lenovo.com domain name, which allowed them to intercept the Lenovo's email and impersonate its web pages. So that's been going on in the hacking world. Lots of stuff going on around the world here. Oh, man, I got to tell you, too, 3D printing, get ready to invest. Engineers in Monash University in Melbourne, Australia, recently 3D printed two entire jet engines out of 3D printers, out of metal. They 3D printed out of metal two entire jet engines. Absolutely crazy. And other people here at the research center in Finland have 3D printed a tree that can create electricity from sunshine, vibrations, and temperature differentials. I mean, we are in a brave new world. Super cool. 3D printing is so awesome. It's going to set the standard here, ladies and gentlemen. We got to go to a 3-minute break. We're going to come back. We have lots of economic stuff to cover with Karen Hudis. Keep it right here, guys, and get your questions ready. We'll be right back. Thanks for being here, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Judith Baker was once a promising science student who dreamed of finding a cure for cancer. This exposé is an account of how she strayed from a path of mainstream scholarship to a life of espionage in New Orleans with Lee Harvey Oswald. In her narrative, she offers extensive documentation on how she came to be a cancer expert and what led to her involvement in the development of a biological weapon that Oswald was to smuggle into Cuba to eliminate Fidel Castro. Details on what she knew of Kennedy's impending assassination and her belief that Oswald was a deep cover intelligence agent who was framed for an assassination he was actually trying to prevent are also revealed. Me and Lee by Judith Baker. Special JFK 50th Anniversary Signed Limited Edition. $30 including shipping. Limited number of these available. Order your copy today at federaljack.com/store.
You must unite what has been set asunder.
We are TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We're moving into the second hour of our live broadcast today. Today is the third day of March, and I'm feverishly trying to get back into the chat room right now. Really appreciate all of you guys being in the chat room at truthfrequencyradio.com. Such a great way for all of you guys to kind of stay in touch with what's going on here at the show, to steward your questions across for the guests that we're having, and to also stay up to date on the news and let me know what you guys are thinking while you're there. Very, very excited to be welcoming the one and only Karen Hudis back to the program today. She has been on the program once before, and we left a lot uncovered, ladies and gentlemen. So we have a lot of things to talk about today. For those of you guys out there who don't know Karen Hudis, she studied law at Yale Law School. She also studied economics at the University of Amsterdam. She worked in the U.S. Import-Export Bank from about 1980 to about 1985, and then in the legal department at the World Bank from 1986 all the way up through 2007. She then went on to establish the Non-Governmental Organization Committee of the International Law Section of the American Bar Association and the Committee on Multilateralism and the Accountability of International Organizations of the American Branch of the International Law Location. Okay, so Karen, first and foremost, thank you very much for joining us once again on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Thanks for having me on, JD. Glad to be back.
Happy to have you anytime. Anytime you have anything you would like to talk about, would love to have you come back. But I know we have a lot to talk about today because economically around the world, we're seeing all kinds of changes taking place. We're seeing the Basel III come into compliance, supposedly. We're seeing this story that broke out of India just today or last night about them creating these sovereign gold bonds. There's a lot of things going on around the world, Karen. And I know that you're kind of mired right in the thick of it right now. And I do want to get into how you are involved with the transitions that are going on economically around the world. But I wonder if before we get into that, if we could maybe start by talking to some of the people out there that maybe don't have any idea that anything is wrong, that may say, you know, I don't mind paying $4 for a loaf of bread or whatever. What are these people talking about? Would you maybe take us back in time just a little bit, Karen, from your perspective, and explain to the people exactly how bad the mess is that we are in right now?
Okay. Actually, I don't think we're in a bad mess at all. I think because we're becoming aware of exactly where we are. Mm-hmm. And that means it's something that can be cleaned up as opposed to getting worse. We're right in the very middle of a transition. And if people want to know what my position is, it's the switchboard operator. Just think of that.
A switchboard operator, okay.
That's right. There are a lot of analogies to be made about what my position is, but I'll tell you why I'm saying that and where I'm sitting. There's something called the Bretton Woods Institutions. That's the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Mm-hmm. They were created in 1944, and most people know them as hated, horrible organizations because they have been running amok and doing terrible things to countries and people. And the fact of the matter is it's true. That's exactly what those organizations have been doing. But the only reason they've been doing that is because those organizations are in something called out of compliance. Now, I'm going to do everything I possibly can not to be a technical whiz kid who bamboozles everybody with words that don't make any sense but sound okay. Because that's actually how one of the ways we got into this mess. And, you know, when I'm listening to the introduction, which is very nice, JD, people that are aware of just how corrupt our international monetary system is know that one of the groups to blame is the legal profession.
Right.
And this is very true. And here I am, a lawyer. Let's step back a little bit and let's just talk about how things look from the legal profession and how they look from my role in the legal profession.
Perfect. Perfect.
Because I started out believing what I saw, which is a facade. And the best way for people who don't know what's going on, that are just stumbling into this broadcast for the first time, think of the Wizard of Oz and think of Dorothy. When she tells the wizard that she's not leaving that day because it took her a lot to get there and she wants him to do her magic. And then Toto pulls back the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've been working together with whistleblowers inside the World Bank, outside the World Bank, people who have been spending years and years trying to understand why things aren't making any sense when you look at them the way they're supposed to be looked at. Yeah?
Yeah.
But I started out believing in the facade. It's just that I wasn't going to be bamboozled. I was stubborn, and I was doing what I thought my job was, which was to tell the truth, to make sure that information went to the board that they needed to know. And I got caught right in the middle of a cover up. And I know if you're in a bank and there's a cover up, you have to uncover the cover up. You have to get the information to flow. Right. So that's how you get the analogy of the switchboard. And also a lot of people say this lady is so improbable. How on earth has she managed to hang in there if she's really who she says she is? And the reason why is because I was right in the middle of that facade, and if they threw me out of the facade, that was going to wreck the facade because I had been documenting everything. That's what lawyers do. They document. And I was doing my job as a lawyer, getting the information from the cover up. And I discovered a cover up. And I can go into great excruciating length about the cover up if people want to know. But rather than digress and bore everybody, let me just say that everything that I'm saying is in a chronology, showing how I woke up along with everybody else. And one of the very critical moments that helped me see that things were really rotten was when I was appointed to a committee that the board set up at the World Bank. It was called the, what was it called? Anyway, it was set up because the board didn't want to be throwing good money after bad. They wanted to clean up the personnel department. And I was one of the two staff association members. And what we did was we brought in a personnel manager who showed us what you were supposed to do to promote the good managers and fire the bad managers. And at the end of that committee, which was in, it was about, in, at the end of the 1990s, at the end of that committee, I said, okay, now that we've made our recommendations, we have to monitor and see whether it's taking our reforms are taking hold. And they said, oh, no, we don't need to bother to monitor. I said, we need two things. The first is to monitor. And the second is we have to have a group that we're reporting back to how the thing is going, a steering committee.
Okay.
They said, we don't want a steering committee and we don't want a monitor. And that's when I knew. And this was to promote good managers and fire bad managers. That's when I knew that we were really, really corrupt.
Right.
And I wasn't totally blindsided. I wasn't totally surprised because before I went to the World Bank, a man who had been there, as the general counsel for 20 years and who had been fighting with Robert McNamara when Robert McNamara became the president of the World Bank for 10 years. And he told me, he was 80 years old when I got to know him. I played the cello and he played the piano. And, you know, I knew I wanted to work at the World Bank. I wasn't sure if I was going to get hired because I'd been trying and I kept not getting hired. Hmm. But, you know, I was interested and I got to practice my Dutch. I speak Dutch.
Oh, nice.
So he, in the course of, you know, playing Beethoven sonatas, he ended up giving me the operation manual for the World Bank. And the most important thing about the World Bank, the most important position is not the president. The most important position is the lawyer, because the lawyer is going to mediate between the president and the board.
Okay.
And the board consists of the countries. It's now 25 board members. It was originally 12, but the 8 biggest economies each get their own dedicated board member, and the others have to share in groups. So, when I went in there to the World Bank in the legal department, I knew what the legal department function was. And so I tried to do what you weren't supposed to do. Hmm. I'm always doing what you're not supposed to do. as a staff member, you are not supposed to get to know the members of the board. They don't want that.
Okay.
And one of the very important members that I got to know, the man who hired me was an Egyptian lawyer named Ibrahim Shihada, who was the general counsel of the OPEC, Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries.
Okay.
And after I was there for a year, I got to know the man who represented Egypt. And this man has been extremely important. But I got to know other executive directors, and they got to know me. So that's a long-winded background, but that's
okay.
Who I am. And as things started going south, I ended up with incredible help. And probably the biggest piece of help I got was from a political scientist named Jacek Kugler, mm-hmm. who had developed a very accurate, it was called a power transition model, for the Department of Defense.
Okay.
And that thing is 90 to 95% accurate. And I have been using that like a blueprint.
Nice. Where is that? Is that printed someplace? I mean, is there someplace we can find a PDF of that? Okay.
I can get it up in, on Skype. I can get it up into your chat group so you people can be looking at it. How's that?
That would be wonderful. Yeah. Shoot it to me in Skype and I'll send it over to the chat room. Is it up at your website, the KAHUDES.net?
No, I'll tell you how I update. I tweet and I have a friends on Facebook, and I also have a page on Facebook. I'll put those links up there. And then there's a very nice guy who has given me a piece of his website that he updates by linking all of these documents. Okay. So the updates are not on my website. What you have on my website is background documentation through 2010.
Okay.
And this shows, and this is actually extremely valuable. One of the nuggets in there, for example, is a law journal article that I wrote together with a German lawyer, that documented just how bad the governance was at the World Bank. And let me just give you one sentence for everybody to think about. The World Bank is sitting on top of the world's wealth. So when it gets hijacked, there goes all our money.
Right.
So when people say, well, you can't clean up the World Bank or just leave it alone, it's so corrupt, it's so hopelessly corrupt, you can't leave it alone because it is holding the world's, it has been kept in hiding. It was put in hiding in at the end of World War II by something called the Black Pope. For people who don't know what the Black Pope is, boy, you better get yourselves into a study group.
Right,
and
Roger
get
that.
Yourself up to speed. Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you should get yourself into a study group anyway, because we are at a turning point. This power transition model that I was talking about, which is 90 to 95% accurate, is telling us that the elite that thought we were too stupid to find out how they were hiding our wealth from us were wrong. We found out, and we are taking our wealth, and the way to take it is through the Bretton Woods institutions, where you've got this board that's where the countries are sitting. And you just have to get your country to understand that you know exactly how they're lying to you and what they're holding back from you. And the chances that you, together with everybody else in all of their countries, end up getting our wealth is 90 to 95%, because that power transition model is that accurate. And it started showing when I got my statement up together with a UK whistleblower, because I started out working very closely with representatives of the other countries at the World Bank, who also knew that what was going on inside the World Bank was total corruption. And Elaine Colville and I got our statements up on the UK Parliament website. I testified to the European Parliament. And when that happened, the model showed that we meaning we, the people of the world, were going to have the real deal. And the real deal is real reality, because we have been living inside a fake bubble that the mainstream media has been at desperate loggerheads to convince us that it was. But this is a one-way street. When you start understanding that the mainstream media is just there to confuse you, and they're, you know, if you want to know what's really going on, look into the mainstream media to see what they're trying to distract you from.
Yes.
It's kind of like reading it inside out.
Well, you got to remember that. I mean, I say this all the time, but anything that you see on TV, be it a product, a person, or a perspective, it's for sale. You just have to bear that in mind with whatever you're seeing on the big glowing box. It's all for sale, and it's all a show. So I completely agree with you, and it's a scary thing, Karen, to kind of come to the realization that just about everything around us is fraud. You know, I mean, that's a scary, not only a scary realization to come to, but then you have to then consciously make a decision to say, I'm going to go now live in truth, as opposed to just continuing to live in the lie. That's a scary proposition for a lot of people, Karen.
Well, there are ways to do it. And one of the ways to be sure is to get yourself embedded in this study group. Because if there are people who you are close to, who you know very well, and you do not think you're crazy, then you are pretty much immune from some of their shenanigans.
Right.
And the thing I did at one point, I wasn't totally naive. I realized that people were going to be gunning for me. I went and got a very good PR guy so that people knew. He was my life insurance policy, Larry Garrison. People knew that if they took me out, it was just going to blow their cover up sky high. That was my life insurance policy. And Larry, by the way, got physically attacked at one point. They didn't like the fact that I had an insurance policy, and he was prepared to drop me. I'm fairly intuitive, but you didn't have to be intuitive to know that he was, you know, unhappy.
Right.
So I got in the plane and I flew out there, and that's when I found out that he had been physically attacked. But Larry is, he's a cool guy, and he's, that guy that was trying to attack him went limping away after that, and they left him alone. Yeah. So, and by the way, you know, people have been doing all kinds of nasty things to me too. I haven't been immune. One guy knocked me for a loop when I was in the synagogue. I'm Jewish. But I've been giving the people, who are trying to pull the wool over the eyes of the Jewish people, just as much indigestion as everybody else.
Right.
If not more so. But let's not focus on religion, because people need to focus on currency. But anyway, telling people what happened to me in the synagogue, there's a maneuver where you hit somebody under the chin as hard as you can. And I had a real concussion. I've never been hit harder. The thing that saved me from, you know, permanent damage, because that guy gave it all he had. I'm fairly tall. I'm 5'9". And he used his elbow to hit, you know, he was in front of me and he brought his elbow up as hard as he could.
Oof.
But he couldn't get it high enough. Because I'm tall.
Okay.
So that's what saved me. But I, you know, I was, I had a terrible, terrible headache for like 3 days after that. But anyway, so I was going to give you, the power transition model.
Yes, I would like to see that for sure. I'm sure we'd like to get it up on the website to let the people see that thing. I want to talk a little bit, just real quick, Karen, if you don't mind, since we were on the subject of the World Bank. obviously, you know, you're what we would consider to be a white hat now, working in, you know, in that respect. Are there other white hats at the world? I think people don't have a really good idea of what the World Bank is. You hear that phrase and you think, well, this thing is an, you know, a marble building up on an ivory tower on planet Nibiru or wherever. And, you know, I just want to know fundamentally any type of information you can give us about actual day-to-day activities. I mean, do they do the human sacrifices in the building, or is there a special courtyard? Is there like, I mean, how often do the Rothschilds, you know, show up as reptilians interdimensionally to deal with banking stuff? Does that all happen there, or is there a different place? Any of that type of stuff you could cover for us would be great, Karen.
All right. Now, you have to understand the way I'm at the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot get in the door.
Okay.
In 2009, which is when I was meeting with the Norwegian representative who chaired a board committee called the Committee on Governance, that was Svein Aas. He was just about to go home, and he reinstated me. And then, you know, I knew he was going home. So I went to some other executive directors that knew me very well, including one who was representing the Russian government.
Okay.
And I said, okay, you guys want me back? So, that's what Svein says ought to happen, because don't forget the World Bank is issuing bonds on the capital markets.
Okay.
$180 billion worth of bonds. And that means that it has to be in compliance, which means that their financial statements have got to be accurate. And for financial statements to be accurate, there has to be something called internal controls, which means that when the accountants say, you know, that number you're putting in the financial statement, that is out of whack. Those accountants have got to be secure in their jobs.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's just the opposite, because some of the accountants said, you know, you're overcharging the borrowers. You're not doing the right interest rate calculation. And those guys were out of there. And and the Senate was not happy about this. And they wrote a very pointed letter, which I keep reminding everybody and showing the people in the Senate that letter. And at the time that I was doing all of this, the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations was chaired by Biden. It had Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama as junior senators. And the senior and most influential senator was Senator Dick Lugar. And Senator Lugar had been working very hard to clean up this corruption. And so he had all kinds of conditions on the World Bank, by the way, isn't funded by Congress, but it does get money every now and then for different things.
Okay.
Some of the interest rates for the very poor countries are bought down by contributions from taxpayers. And also, sometimes the World Bank gets more capital, and then the Congress has to appropriate it. So the Congress, when I was fired and Senator Lugar wrote three letters to the World Bank saying, don't fire this lady, they were mad. And then in the appropriations legislation, they tried to put a rider in there about getting rid of this corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what happened? Some of the senators were crooked. like the guy who was chairing the appropriations committee language, he just took the language out of there.
Right.
Although all the Senate had approved it.
Hmm.
That was Senator Leahy's guy. And by the way, just to give you a background story, one day, one of the whistleblowers and I, we were talking about this creep in the Senate who had just erased the language. That was, a rider that Senator Bayh had put in.
Okay.
And, anyway, so we were laughing about it, and we were talking about just how corrupt the aide for, Senator, Leahy was. And we, you know, I don't want to, it's kind of off color, but
that's okay.
Anyway, it's really, when we have time to tell the story the way it needs to be told, all of these crooks are going to find themselves totally exposed. And, you know, a lot of people talk about, throwing people in jail. I don't want to get involved in all of that, but there is something I do want to get involved in, and that is telling the story the way it happened.
Right.
And in particular, the way we would laugh about it. And it would also be on the other side. So, for example, at the World Bank, there's a group called the Institutional Integrity Department. That is a goon squad.
That's good. That sounds so Orwellian, yeah, doesn't it?
It is. It's set there to fire any staff member who tries to tell the truth.
Right.
And they had Paul Volcker come in and do a cover-up, a whitewash for it. And there was a woman there who's gone on to greener pastures, who actually lived two houses down from me. Hmm. And back when I thought things were the way they were supposed to be, I kept going to this lady for help. She must have been really laughing at me.
Right.
But in the meantime, I documented all of the times I went to her. So when things turn around, all of this conversation, all of these letters, and if you go on my website, you'll see all the letters. You'll see all the BS that people were giving me through the years. But it's going to be really, really fun. But let me tell you one story that I think is very important for people to understand.
Okay.
Because we've been talking on Twitter about how this transformation is going to happen and what all is going to happen.
Right.
And whether it's really possible or whether people are just being hoodwinked and bullshit some more.
Okay.
Sorry for my
That's
French.
Okay. That's what it is,
yeah.
You know.
Okay. So here are the mechanics so you understand just how it's going to happen. The World Bank has bylaws which say that the countries are in control, not the cabal. So what they did was the cabal came in there 3 years after the World Bank was created, and they wrote a memorandum. It's not in the rules. It's just a memorandum that says the board is going to sit on its hands. And anytime the president proposes something, and the board is just going to sit there and vote it up and down. And this is just a memo. And so I gave a legal interpretation. I gave a legal opinion. I said, when you've got this much corruption, you are not allowed to do that. You have to exercise your authority. The president works for you. You don't work for the president. So just think about it. The president is the cabal.
Right.
So it's the rule of law is that the cabal is under the countries. Now, the countries are not uniformly clean, but when all of the people on Earth know that those executive directors are sitting on top of our money, it's ours, not theirs, ours, they're going to straighten themselves out and fly straight.
Boy, I hope so.
Yeah, they have to. They have no choice. They have nowhere to go.
Karen, if you had to put a number on it, just for just the people here in the United States and then also on a global level, how much do you think that these international banking cartels have stolen wealth-wise from us?
I can't answer that because I have been trying to audit.
Right.
So I have been doing exactly that. I have been – but I'll tell you – a lot of the gold is in the Philippines.
Right.
It's
mm-hmm.
been, it's in an area that's been cordoned off behind the military.
Okay.
And I think the best way to answer that question is a different answer, which is, I had somebody from the military call me up. You know, I was telling you about this power transition model, which is very, very accurate. Mm-hmm. And he was calling me up to give me some information about a website somewhere. And I said, you have a lot of nerve calling up a girl in a taxi cab when you're in the military. How many people in the military know about this corruption? He said, about 50%. Now, I think that number has probably gone up. We're talking about the internet, and we're talking about people. Now, I have been talking about General Dempsey, and at one point, I got so mad at that.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRA.
worldwide.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the Iodine Now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a one-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at HempUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods, but what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
White Buffalo with John Phillips.
Tuesday through Thursdays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. And thank you all of you who are hanging out in the chat room. If you guys have questions or comments for Karen Hudis, stick them in there and I will ferry them across to her. I want to highly recommend everyone go to her website, which is kahudes.net, karenhudis.net. And you'll be able to keep up to date with things like that. I definitely recommend finding her on Facebook as well and getting involved with her Twitter feed, as that is where all of her most recent breaking information seems to be coming from. So Karen, thank you again for being here today. Before the break, we were just talking about the power transition model, and you just sent that to me via Skype, so I'm going to get that up at redpillreports.com. I want to thank all of you guys who are live streaming right now. Holy cow, major live stream numbers right now. Probably the biggest of the show ever, Karen. Just so you know, lots of people very interested in what you have to say today. Do you want to just go ahead and pick it up? We were just starting to talk about the gold in the Philippines. We were talking about Mr. Dempsey and this power transition model. Any place in there you'd like to pick it up, Karen, the floor is yours.
Okay, let's go back to Knights of Malta.
Okay.
Knights of Malta are a secret society. There are loads of those secret societies. And what they do is they start out by getting people enticed with the rewards. And if you are a Knight of Malta, you will be given a very senior position. That's the good side.
Okay.
The bad side is that anything you do once you get in that position is not going to be what you want to do or what you think is right. It's going to be what you're told to do.
Makes sense.
And one of those secret societies is Skull and Bones at Yale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we've got former Senator, now Secretary of State Kerry.
That's correct.
So one of my tweets was correspondence that I had with Senator Kerry just before I went to all the rest of the countries in the world to tell them about the corruption. I first gave him a crack at it when he was the chair at the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations.
It's very charitable of you, giving them at least an out, I guess, right?
Yeah. So, you know, all of these crooks now are skewered on their greed. And we have documented this. So, you know, I was talking a little bit before about what we should do when we get a hold of these people. I'll tell you, I think it's going to take a while for us to really get ourselves up to speed. And if we don't focus on getting ourselves up to speed and saved, we're going to go into another dark age. So let's focus on what we need. But one of the things that we can do right off the bat without having to think twice about it is expose these people
right.
mm-hmm. for what it is they've done. You know, the fig leaves are off and they are there, you know, like the emperor has no clothes. And one of the very, very nice things that happened this past Christmas, I told you I speak Dutch. And I just happened to stumble on a television program where a man named Herman Wijfels, who had been the prime minister in the Netherlands, and then he came to the World Bank, and he had a very senior position on the board. And when they fired Paul Wolfowitz, he was in charge.
Oh,
and
okay.
He went back to Holland and started complaining in Dutch about the fact that the board members who were trying to fire Paul Wolfowitz were being blackmailed because some of them had gone to the same, this was the lady, the New York madam who Elliot Spitzer had tangled with.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you had, Herman Wijfels complaining about the blackmail of the board. And then after that, the very next day after that, Ad Melkert, who had also, he had been the Dutch government's, predecessor on the board, and he was then at UNDP. And so he was interviewed on the Dutch television program. Mm-hmm. And he was asked, is this true, what Herman Wijfels said? And he said, well, I'm a boring guy, but I certainly know people on the board that are being blackmailed. And they weren't just using the New York madam. They had gone into their bank accounts, and anybody who was spending money in a way that made them vulnerable was told that this was going to be made public information.
Right.
Now, the thing about those their ambassadors, they are a pretty hearty bunch. And I mean, never mind. We can spend three whole sessions talking about what happened to the managing director, France's managing director, Strauss.
Okay.
But let's not go there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, you know, there are going to be some interesting chapters in this book that I have to write.
Roger that.
But anyway, so when they were told that the fact that they went to the New York madam meant that they shouldn't fire Paul Wolfowitz, they fired that guy with vengeance. And they have been very happy to see how the American people are waking up, because they want their day with the American people. They didn't particularly relish the idea of being blackmailed so that Paul Wolfowitz could give a big pay raise
right.
to his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was in my legal opinion that went to the General Assembly of the UN, that particular episode. And when I came back from Holland and I saw what was going on, and don't forget I had this power transition model that told me that the U.S. was not only was the U.S. going to lose its leadership, but what I found out about this power transition model was that we were on a collision course for a nuclear war in the Middle East.
Wow.
Yeah. Yasser Kugler said, Karen, we have 5 years to prevent a nuclear war in the Middle East. That was Syria, folks. We avoided that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we are going strong in that power transition model ever since Elaine Colville and I got our statement up. It is telling us exactly what you see happening right here. People understand that this garbage that the mainstream media is telling us is garbage. All we have to do is look at it to see where they want us. It's kind of like when you see the magician's sleight of hand tricks.
Mm-hmm.
You're just sort of watching that magician, and you're saying, well, your sleight of hand isn't really working anymore, sir. That's where we are right now.
Right.
And so if you want to know what the chances are for us to have a peaceful transition, the answer is, how many of us know not to believe the mainstream media anymore? And I would say that's more than the majority right now.
I think you're right.
They've just been, and look what happened with that stupid thing in France where it was, they were deliberately trying to show that it was a false flag,
mm-hmm.
With wheels within wheels. Well, you know, we're just not taking any of their storyline. And this ISIS garbage This is just garbage, and we know it's garbage.
I agree. I think the stuff that's going on in Ukraine right now is garbage as well. I mean,
that's right. That's right. And let me tell you what I'm doing immediately after I get off this show. I'm going to be going down to the Senate Committee on Banking, because they are going to be talking about reform of the Federal Reserve. And for those who don't know what the Federal Reserve is, that is the group that has bought up the mainstream media that thinks that we're too stupid to know that they're just trying to lie to us. They're just liars. And where things stand with that is that the World Bank is sitting on the world's wealth. Mm-hmm. We, the people, not we, the governments. We, the people, own the world's wealth.
I gotta interject and ask a question. I saw a picture the other day of some bonds that were issued by the Treasury to the Federal Reserve back in 1934 at 4% interest. And, I want to talk about this whole, not only the Global Trust Fund underneath the World Bank, but also, you know, the United States Treasury versus the Federal Reserve and what's going on with the Basel III compliance that we keep hearing all about. Can you kind of break some of that stuff down for us, Karen?
Yes, that is the question. Thank you so much, JD. I can get distracted. That is very much the heart and the crux of the question.
Okay.
Because what is the global debt facility? That's a funny word. They call it a lot of other things, the collateral accounts. That is a trust fund. Just think of an inheritance where your ancestor has put all of the money that you are to inherit in a trust fund for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, that trust fund was set up deliberately for a 50-year period. And the reason they did that was because in the language of the law, after 50 years, if you don't have control over something, it's not yours anymore. And there were a lot of competing claims on the world's wealth, and it went into that 50-year period of sequestration in hiding. But the idea was that at the end of the 50 years, it was supposed to come out for the benefit of humanity.
When was that supposed to be?
It was supposed to be 2005.
2005,
and they,
okay.
Yeah. And they haven't done their job, have they?
No, not that I've noticed.
No. That's right. Okay, but in the meantime, I learned about it. I learned about it after I'd been fired for a few years. I learned about it about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in that year and a half is that I was given very important rights. I was delegated those rights by the 188 ministers who saw what I was trying to do, which was just fly straight.
Right.
And in that year and a half, I've had so many crazy schemes that people have wanted me to open up that global debt facility before we had the capabilities of auditing it, before we were in charge of it, so it could be ripped off. And I wouldn't do it. I said, these are the preconditions. And furthermore, it's not me. I'm just doing this on behalf of the 188 countries that belong.
Yeah, you're just an administrator, essentially, at this
point. I am the switchboard operator.
Perfect. Okay.
So when they come to me and say, I want you to do this, I say, I'm going to send this to the board. And I've sent memoranda to the board on this. And I've gone back and referred to them. And finally, I realized that because of the way things are, it's got to be approved by 188 countries. They cannot delegate this to the board. I'm not going to do anything on the basis of a board decision. And I've told the board this now until the board of governors delegates it to the board. I'm just doing what a lawyer's supposed to do. That's all I'm doing to the best of my abilities. And, you know, one of the other really good things about this whole period of time that we've had to get used to this scenario is that I'm not perfect. I've made mistakes. I've made mistakes in judgment. And every time that's happened, I've learned from it. And then I've said to people, okay, I'm just sitting here as the switchboard operator. Don't think I think that I can do this by myself, because I'm not trying to do that. I have no pretensions.
Right.
And one of the most important things about the no pretensions, and this is what people in the United States and everywhere else have to understand, is that we are not going to be taking over the governance of those countries. There is a specific provision in the World Bank articles. It was put there for the very reason that we're sitting on the world's wealth, and that is we are not allowed to intervene in the politics of these countries.
Hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So don't worry whether the World Bank is taking over the United States. It is just the opposite. We are out of your governance. We are out of your politics.
Wow.
But what we are is we are calling out the liars. And the biggest lie is that the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve own the gold reserves of the United States. They write in their financial statements how much gold they have.
Right.
That's not their gold.
It's crazy.
It belongs to humanity.
Yeah, and so all these people wanting to audit the Fed, and it's like the Fed has nothing. They stole it from everyone else. Why would we worry about auditing them? Let's just shut them down, you know?
Okay, exactly. And so what I did was I used – because people – don't forget, people are coming to me and telling me what I need to know. And they told me that something I didn't know, which was what the Postmaster – Universal Postal Union is,
mm-hmm,
and what the U.S. Postmaster General is. That position is senior to the presidency of the United States.
Say that again, will you please? And say it a little slower. Universal Postal Union, senior to the president of the United States.
Okay. In the United States, we have something called the Postmaster General.
Right.
That's what Benjamin Franklin was. That position is more senior than the presidency of the United States.
Man, that is a big secret that you're letting out on the air right now, Karen.
Yes, and I didn't know it. People
right?
came to me and showed it to me. And they showed me, you know, and I didn't get this all in one fell swoop. I got bits and pieces from different people.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody else told me recently about a procedure called a notarial protest. You go to somebody and you tell them a fact and you give them every opportunity to correct that fact. And if they haven't corrected the fact, it is a fact. And I have gone to the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury and I have said, who owns the gold? Is it me in the global debt facility or is it you? And I've completed that procedure and I got it. I've put it out on the internet and I got it notarized and I sent it to the Director General of the Universal Postal Union.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the return receipt yesterday and I tweeted that and I sent it over to the Senate Committee on Banking. And I said, when you are talking about reform of the Federal Reserve, you better keep a couple of things in mind. And then I went and retweeted some of the tweets from the people who had seen the documentation that I'm telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
And if people don't understand how real this is, they have to understand how difficult it was for me to do this. First of all, I couldn't even keep my head up last night. I was ready to fall down. I was so tired. I don't know what was wrong with me.
Hmm.
I went and I sat in the bathtub and I fell asleep in the bathtub for a couple hours. I woke up at 1:30 and I went down and I finished writing what I needed to write. And I tweeted that and I took the retweets and I sent that to the Senate Committee on Banking. And I'll tell you what it says. And I'm going down there. And I sent it to those guys, and I showed them what the tweet said. One of the tweets was a letter that one of the people on my Facebook page had written to their representative of the House. It was, and I forget which one it was, but it doesn't matter. It was, you know, you people in Congress have been declaring a state of emergency without bothering to tell us. Don't you think it's time that you told us this? That was one of the comments.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And the other comment had to do with what's reality, whether reality is the U.S. corporation,
mm-hmm,
or whether reality is something else. And by the way, this is the day that we've got Netanyahu briefing
right.
the U.S. Guess which is more important, a big player who's given lines by the banking cartel, or the people who understand what the reality is and have told their members of Congress that, you know, that people know exactly who they are and what they're doing. And they can just keep on doing it, but they're just, you know, tightening the noose around their own necks because we're on to them. We are on to them.
Hmm. Well, that's certainly encouraging. I think this whole Netanyahu thing is a joke anyway, because I've got it on pretty good authority that we've already signed these sanction deals with Iran. If you think about who, you know, President Barack Obama's senior cabinet officials there are, one of them's an Iranian national. The idea that we're not, you know, in cahoots with Iran at this point would be ridiculous. I think this whole Netanyahu coming here is just part of the show. But I want to get back on track with this whole global debt facility thing. And I want to ask you just if you could clarify for the people, especially for me, because because I just don't understand. What is this whole Basel III compliance thing? Is this the feds basically trying to fight back against what you're doing on the global scale, or is this part of that transition process we're talking about? What is Basel III and how does it affect us?
It doesn't affect us anything whatsoever. That is more of this projection screen. When you think of the Fed or Basel III or the Committee of 20 or any of these thugs, that is just the projection screen. The reality is what we are talking about right now, the real gold that belongs to the people and that's going to be used for their currencies, because paper is going to crash. Paper is worth the paper it's written on, and that is it. Right. And this business about capital adequacy and all of that, that's just part of this paper system. Let me just take a half second out to let people know what kind of a scam we're talking about.
Yes, please.
All right. When you look at your piece of paper note, that is a note. That is not currency. That doesn't belong to the United States. That is a bank note. It's unconstitutional. And the difference between the amount that it costs the Fed to print that piece of paper and the face value is kept by the Fed. And then they have the gall to charge us interest on the principal to make, you know, adding insult to injury. Now, that's all it is. But let me just go back for a half second to Iran and the difference between reality and this whole construct that has been built up by the Bank for International Settlements and something called the Network of Global Corporate Control, which is a group that owns 40% of the assets of the company on the capital markets and 60% of their earnings. And they did do it by spending money on the shares. First of all, they printed that it's called seniorage, the difference between the face value of the currency and what it costs to print it.
Okay.
They used seniorage to buy that. And then they didn't even spend that much money because they have interlocking directors. So they put the same directors in a kind of a pyramid going up to maintain control.
Wow.
So that what you're talking about, Basel III, that is what that group that is printing money for us to work on and pay through real wages, their paper scam. And it's a scam, and we don't need to do it. And we are not going to do it. The chances that we move to reality and cut them out of the deal, we are cutting them out of the deal. Let me repeat that one more time. We are cutting them out of the deal. Now, let's talk about Iran.
Okay.
What's really going on with Iran?
Let's do it.
All right. Press TV, that is their television station.
Okay.
Look at the interview that Press TV did of me. They know who I am. I am working on behalf of the 98% of humanity. That's who I am.
Okay.
I'm nothing more and nothing less. That's who I am. That's what's going on. And we know it. So, you know, pieces of paper floated between one crook and another is not what's really going on. Now, the question is, how do we get from those crooks at the top to what's really going on? That's the interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that is that it is going to be very, very, very difficult to do it in a smooth way because of all the people that are ignorant and don't know about what's reality and what's false.
Okay.
And you better believe that those crooks, that banking cartel is going to play on those fools.
Oh, hugely.
They're fools. Like, you know, like it's their accordion.
Right.
Because that's what they've been doing through millennia. So we have, you know, and we, on the other hand, have not gotten used to being in control. We don't know how to do it. And nobody's going to do it for us. And the way it's going to happen and the way it has to happen is for the people who are listening to this and understand it to get themselves up to speed and tell everybody else who's clueless.
Right.
So that we don't fall apart at the seams. Now, this is not going to be easy. And then we're going to have to try to figure out how to sequence things in a smooth way. And as somebody who studied economics, I can tell you it's going to be very easy to crash this whole system and not smooth transition.
Right.
So it's going to be really hard when we understand that we're going from their fake system to reality for us to keep from crashing, to do it smoothly. That is going to be such a balancing act. And we're going to have to do that.
Well, let's talk about that balancing act. What do we do here on the ground in terms of hedging our bets against, a radically changing economic system? Are there things that we can be holding right now that potentially are going to be worth a lot more, like gold? I mean, what's the true value of gold after this thing goes down?
Hold precious metals. But the reason to hold the precious metals is not because you're going to get rich that way. Because there's more gold than you know about. And when people say, how could there possibly be that much gold? It's because in addition to taking our reality from us, of course, they had to take our history from us. Uh-huh. We have been around from before the previous ice age. And you know that because of maps that were printed in the Middle Ages.
Right.
That showed the ice caps on, it's called Queen Maud Land in Antarctica. The way the landmass moves, that's been covered by ice. But we can see on these ancient maps that somebody was a good cartographer and knew how to draw that coastline. So that's how you can tell that we have a lot longer civilization than people are giving us credit for. And we have been mining gold through that long period of time. That's how we got so much gold.
Right.
That's there and that's ours. Okay, so I'm sorry, what was your question again, JD?
Well, I was just trying to figure out what we can do out here on the ground while this transition is taking place. If you can kind of look at, you know, we're going to go through step A, step B, step C, and it's, you know, whatever we're kind of looking at in terms of these transitory steps, you know, we already talked about gold and precious metals, but I'm just wondering if there are currencies or anything else out there that are going to change in value suddenly or anything like that coming down the pike. Or are we going to lose a lot of purchasing power in the dollar once China, you know, is in charge of the IMF, which it looks like?
China is not going to be in charge of the IMF. We look at this power transition model, and what it says is that we are going to wake up, 95% likelihood, we are going to wake up. The internet is there for us, and we've learned how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Clean up our governance in the United States. We're going to take back our Constitution, the original Constitution, not the secret one that they put in place in 1871. We're going to go back to the real Constitution. And then here, I'm talking about the U.S. For the people in the other countries, you're going to have to figure it out how to do it yourself. We had our founding fathers who may have been not telling us what's going on, but they built in mechanisms for us to pretty easily straighten ourselves out. We also have the county governments, and there's something called the County Executives of America that have accepted the gold that belongs to the United States so that we can transition to gold currency. But
wow.
I forgot to talk about the most important currency, and this goes for everybody. That is local currency in every single country. That's more important than this gold. What you do is in the local area, you have your local businesses agree on a local currency, and you use it. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be taking away something called legal tender laws, which saying what's legal. We're going to take that away. Now, in the United States, there's the Constitution, which talks about national currency, but it doesn't prevent us from having local currencies. And some local areas have those. And once you have them, you have immediate employment, full employment everywhere.
All right.
So that's, you know, that's the immediate thing you can do is get yourself together with people and create those currencies.
There you go. I love it. Karen Hudis, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thanks, JD.
Absolutely. Keep up the good work out there and keep us up to date as to what is going on. I think everybody, I'm speaking for everybody in the chat room right now, we are all ready for a dramatic shift in the wealth of our people. So appreciate everything you're doing out there. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for tuning in once again today. Tomorrow, James Perloff will be on the show. We're going to go through.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. TLR. Make it TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.